Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah coming to you from the Kintec studio as the Canucks fall to the Oilers in the finale of the Young Stars tournament. It's good. Hockey is back, Sat.
It is. I'm so excited to have hockey back. Yeah. Even Young Stars. I mean, I got to say, I mean, the hockey's been all right. It's, you know, it's not fantastic. But just nice to watch some Canucks hockey, watch a few prospects, and just slowly get yourself into the hockey-watching mindset again.
Tristan Nielsen is moving high up my favorite players in the organization board.
Ah, yes, yes.
The mic'd up video that they released with Tristan Nielsen yelling "get some" at everybody.
Yeah.
he's just a little guy. He's a little firecracker. I'm all for it. I love it.
I wonder where he gets the "get some" from. Is it from just, you know, watching military movies and stuff like that? Is there some sort of backstory to it? Maybe somebody already knows about the backstory, but maybe when we get a chance to chat with him one of these days, we'll ask him where the "get some" comes from. But hey, he's a guy we mentioned ahead of prospects camp.
Yep.
If you're looking to keep an eye on players who might play games for you, who impress quietly and that aren't being kind of talked about a lot, Tristan Nielsen's one of those guys.
Just on an AHL contract, played with the Vancouver Giants, and an interesting player, to say the least. This hour is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local business since 1892. Let's bring in our next guest. He's our Monday insider. It's Frank Saravalli. Frank, how was the summer?
It was really good, guys. Glad to be back for another year. And yeah, hope the same for you.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a good summer. We can't wait for the actual games to get going. Countdown is on, 6 days till preseason. And then, of course, less than a month for opening night. But we just had a trade go down in the NHL, and a player that some people believed the Canucks may have been interested in as well. Nils Lundqvist going to the Dallas Stars for a first-round pick. The Rangers got the price they were asking for.
Yeah, they did. A top 10 protected first round pick at that. So sort of de-risks the scenario. Not that anyone's thinking that might play out given the two teams involved this year. But when you take a look at Nils Lundqvist and really the back end of the New York Rangers, there's just no room to continue to progress and move forward. I mean, when you've got a right side that has Adam Fox, Jacob Trouba, and Braden Schneider, who's a burgeoning, promising player, you know, who are you stealing ice time from? And Nils Lundqvist was a guy that at this age, you know, being 23 years old or 21 years old, whatever it is, like he's got a future that he wanted to see play out elsewhere, given the logjam that's in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rangers get that first round pick that, you know, for a team that finished in the Final Four last year and is now has a ton of expectations, this can go one of two ways. You can either take that first round pick and use it as currency at the deadline, mm-hmm. or use your other one, or use them both to help improve your team. So a real nice feather in the cap for the Rangers to have moving forward.
Well, and the thing that impresses me is that Drury has been setting a pretty high price for his players or his good prospects, and Lundqvist especially. And despite the fact he asked for a trade and despite the fact there is a logjam in front of him, be able to get this price, what does that say about Drury and his ability to hold firm?
Well, I mean, look, it makes sense because there aren't a ton of right shot defensemen out there that can play and skate. Let alone of that age and that pedigree, Lundqvist also being a late first round pick. And I think anytime you've got a situation on your roster or in your organization on your big board where you've got a logjam and you can basically get back for that player what you put into him, and it's probably going to be better since that pick was 28th, that, you know, you win. You're in a spot where you can at least kick the can down the road a little bit if you keep the pick. And if not, given where you are in your process of building your team, like I said, use it as currency. It's a home run. And really, it's a nice fit for the Stars as well, because they're a team that lost John Klingberg in the summer. And, you know, we're looking for a way to replace him. I don't think anyone thinks that Lundqvist is there right yet or even close to it, but someone that can continue to grow with a team that really needs help transitioning their roster from some of the older players that they've had to some young guys.
Well, the story for me, at least from a Canucks perspective, Frank, is this is a team that's been looking for help on the right side, but it's not going to come cheap. Like, even to take a chance on guys, and Lundqvist, yeah, he's still a highly touted or fairly highly touted prospect, but it's not going to come cheap. And the other name they've been linked to is Ethan Bear over with Carolina. And even I know him coming off a tough year dealing with COVID and everything, still seems like Carolina can hold firm and get something back for a right shot D like him.
They're trying. I mean, I think if they were going to be successful, they probably would have been successful before going down the path with him and his qualifying offer. I view the Ethan Bear situation pretty similarly to how things are playing out with Jesse Puljujärvi and the Edmonton Oilers. Like, both guys are under contract. I don't think either guy is very happy with his lot in life at the moment and is open to a change. And yet neither team really wants to give the player away, quite clearly, because that's poor asset management. You've got to get something of value in return. And, you know, I think when you compare Lundqvist to a guy like Ethan Bear, I think there's way more known about Bear. Like, we know exactly what he is at this point. He's someone that has a ton of talent and upside, but has really struggled with consistency, and a lot of that's due to, I think, the way that he manages himself off the ice. The big knock on Bear has been that he's out of shape, that he's someone that struggles to manage his weight. And it really seems to come down to a maturity issue more often than not. And so, that's been his struggle. Different players have different, you know, things that they're dealing with. And so, Carolina is well aware. Edmonton was well aware when they made the swap for Warren Fogel, a year back. And so, you know, Carolina, where does Bear fit there? Can he be the same, you know, spot in the lineup that he's at for a team that now has a real cap crunch, and you know, you'd like to get more production out of that player at that type of cap hit? Who's going to give up a significant asset in order to take that on?
Well, and I think that's where, for Vancouver, I'm just so curious about what it would take to acquire Ethan Bear, because I can't see them being willing to part with, you know, a high-level asset. As much as he is a right-handed defenseman, the issue you just mentioned and the fact that he's owed $2.2 million this season, I mean, is there a way that trade can happen without Carolina having to take some sort of money back in some way, shape, or form?
I think it's possible, but it would require my guess is like a mid to late round pick, you know, fourth, fifth round, something in that neighborhood, if there's not money coming back the other way, given how tight everyone is at the cap. 12 teams, guys, opening night, October 11th, are likely to be operating in LTIR, if not more than that. That's a huge chunk of the league, and there's just not a lot of space to go around. So at 2.2, you better be getting your money's worth, and you can't afford to have that player sitting out as your seventh guy halfway through the season because things didn't work out.
Yeah, we see that with even Jason Dickinson and how quickly, you know, his salary started to look onerous for the Vancouver Canucks after the season he had last year. It's you know, it's one of those things. It's always going to be tough to find that right shot defenseman. You generally have to draft them or pay big money for any type of a surefire player that ends up in free agency. This is probably Patrick Alvin's biggest job as general manager of the Vancouver Canucks, is how he reshapes the defense. They wanted to do it this summer, Frank. There's just not really any opportunities that came forward for them.
Yeah, look, you hit it on the head. It's expensive. You have to be willing to pay the price, and you have to be getting a player that you truly believe in order to pull the trigger and pay that price. I was curious what the reaction was like in the market when you hear someone like Quinn Hughes say that he's open to trying some things on the right side, even if it's not an everyday thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where Vancouver kind of finds itself here, is being in a spot
where peg and round hole at times.
Yeah. Just get Quinn Hughes on the right side. Maybe it'll solve some of our problems, because it might be easier to acquire a left shot D than it would be to acquire a right shot D.
Well, it's always way easier to acquire the left shot D. It's like the thing is, you really need to find someone that's comfortable playing the other side, and those guys are far and few between. It's why when you see, you know, someone like Mackenzie Weegar, for instance, change teams, like, you know, that's a nice little benefit to have on your team, someone that can play the other side just as comfortably as he did in Florida.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we'll see what happens with him. Now, the big kind of unresolved issue for Vancouver remains a contract situation. They got the JT Miller one done during the summer, Frank, and, you know, that came to a big surprise.
I had a feeling this was coming.
Right. And so here's the...
How many hits do you think we did last year when we talked about JT Miller at some point? That transaction, the contract was signed, you know, and I'm like, oh, yes. No more JT Miller talk.
I know. So we're happy with no more JT Miller talk, but the thing is, there's Bo Horvat talk until JT Miller, until his situation gets figured out. And where do you think that's at?
I mean, feels like DJ Khaled, like, on to the next one, you know?
And another one!
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. So here's the situation. And I say this because I feel like we've also learned something from the JT Miller mm-hmm. talk and how things really played out. We left after free agency saying that the two sides weren't even in the same ballpark, JT Miller and the Canucks, and weren't close. And all of a sudden they bridged the gap quickly and quietly. I'll say this. With regards to Bo Horvat, I don't think they're close. I don't think there's been much progress made at all. In fact, I think that there's maybe even a little bit more friction that's existed this time around between the Canucks and their captain, given how the tenor of talks have gone to this point, than there were with JT Miller. Because I think at least with JT Miller, there was this like, okay, like, if you're not going to give it to me, someone's going to give me a bag, and I'm cool with that. I think there's been way more emotion for a guy that's a homegrown player that has obviously taken on a big leadership role, not just, you know, on the ice, but off it as well. And I think probably some of that hurts. So that's been slow developing. But, like, the way I caution that is exactly what I just said about Miller. Like, this can change quickly. It only takes a phone call. I don't think it's imminent, but I, you know, I was totally shocked with the way things played out with Miller. So I always allow for that possibility.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it comes out of left field with JT Miller when it did. Does it say anything to you that the Canucks prioritized getting Miller done before their captain, Bo Horvat?
Not really. Like, isn't that the way that it should be? Like, when you look at JT Miller and his production and just how much of a valuable commodity he's been for the Canucks the last couple of seasons, like, isn't there a natural pecking order that exists mm-hmm. when you're slotting out your board in terms of how things are going to look? Like, JT Miller was always going to be more expensive than Bo Horvat, so you need to get that one done first to then kind of know what your board looks like and how much you have left over, right?
No, absolutely. And I mean, you know, we talk about this so much throughout the year. JT is a superior player, but the point that you mentioned, he's still the player that Canucks drafted all those years ago, developed into the captain of the team. He's a centerman and all those different sort of things. And one of the things that's true about Bo, I think, Frank, is that his reputation around the league is really good. So in terms of if Vancouver couldn't get a deal done, if they had to explore the trade market, I don't know. I think there's something good there, and I wouldn't be surprised if some teams may like him more than like a JT Miller fit, number one, because the money might be different, but also because of the type of player he is and in how they view him as an asset.
It's possible. Look, I mean, just from calls that I've fielded in the last week, getting my bearings after the summer, like, there were a few teams that were like, man, I would love to get my hands on Bo Horvat in terms of, you know, where things are at with his contract and, you know, the type of player that he is, the complete player that he is. I think, is it possible that teams might prioritize Bo over JT? Yes. You know, I don't know that that's how I would build my team, but that doesn't matter. You're not asking me that.
It's just hard to imagine a world where, you know, Bo's getting less than $7 million on the average annual value. And I wonder if the way the Canucks cap structure is, if they'd be comfortable going above that, given they have paid Miller, you've got a Pettersson contract coming a couple of years down the road. I mean, there's, essentially it comes down to how much money can you afford to pay your top three centers collectively under the salary cap?
Yeah, there's always that calculus that goes into it. I think the issue is, and it's always hard to parse out these details because, you know, first off, they change and there's always a lot of hearsay, but some of the rumblings that came out from these talks as they got started was that, forget seven, the Canucks' initial proposition or volley towards the Horvat camp was a number that started with a five. So I think that's part of where the friction comes in that I was talking about. Maybe a little bit of a feel like, you know, disrespect that that's not sort of how Bo Horvat saw himself and his position in the league, and understandably so. And so that's been a big, you know, bone of contention here in the last number of weeks, that this isn't exactly, you know, all lovey-feely as you get close to training camp. It hasn't been great.
No, and I mean, we'll see where that all goes, because you're right. I mean, we've seen this with captains before. Gabriel Landeskog with Colorado, it got really testy, and it thought they were going to leave, and eventually they figured it out. So we've seen this with captains before going to the last minute. So ultimately, do we think these sort of things will usually get resolved? Now, as far as unresolved things around the league, what's the one thing you're looking at that you're really interested in? Is it Jason Robertson? Is there something around the league that hasn't been resolved yet that you're keeping a keen eye on as camp rolls nearby?
Seth, can you narrow it down a little bit? Like,
okay.
We've got positional battles. We've got probably some people entering the year on hot seats. We've got...
How about this? How about the Philadelphia Flyers? The Flyer situation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is very specific. I like this.
All right, so Couturier is out, looks like, with a herniated disc. Could be out all season. This is a team that's already had some turnover. John Tortorella's coming in. But they didn't really make the types of moves a lot of people expected them to make. Like, does it not seem like something else is coming in Philly, depending on how this year goes?
Something else? And
like a big, like the actual shakeup people were waiting for.
Which is the general manager, is that what you're asking?
General manager, and also like a move on the ice. Let's say they finally make a Konechny move. They may move one of those big pieces.
To be honest, I'm surprised that there wasn't a bigger shakeup this past summer. Like the fact that, you know, a year ago we were hearing Chuck Fletcher saying, and they made massive moves then, of, you know, we can't bring back the same group and expect different results. And that involved the trade of Jake Voracek to Columbus. And then they go through this year and they trade Claude Giroux, another franchise stalwart. And they're in a spot where, though, by and large, they're mostly bringing back the same team with the addition of Anthony DeAngelo. And he's coming off a tremendous season in Carolina. Maybe some pressure of playing in front of a hometown team on a 2-year deal at $5 million, there are real questions there. And I thought, you know, a lot of the Flyers' success heading into this upcoming season, it was reliant on getting healthy, a healthy Kevin Hayes, a healthy Sean Couturier, a healthy Ryan Ellis. Well, now we know Sean Couturier, as reported this afternoon, they're hoping, like fingers crossed, wishing, praying, that in 6 to 8 weeks his back and the herniated disc that he has will heal itself. If not, he needs surgery and could be out for the bulk of the season, if not the entire thing. Is Kevin Hayes going to find his legs again? What will that relationship be like playing under John Tortorella? How will the coaching change impact this team? And then the big question on the blue line is Ryan Ellis. Like, is he going to be healthy and available to play? That's a huge question mark heading into medicals and camp later this week.
It's got so much blow-up potential in Philly, especially with Torts coming in. He's already called out the room a little bit over the course of the summer. It feels like Vancouver all over again. Torts coming to Vancouver all over again.
Well, and calling out the locker room before you've even spent a day in it, It is fascinating to see. I think it's a fascinating hire, just because I think he's exactly what this team didn't need. But hey, let's see what happens.
Can't wait for these hits the rest of the season and all the Bo Horvat scuttlebutt we'll get from you. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thanks. Can't wait to do it again next week. Talk to you guys on Monday.
I'm sure nobody's going to pick up anything you said today about Bo, Frank, so don't worry about
it. Yeah, I'm sure I won't see a tweet on my timeline in 13 seconds.
Thanks, Frank.
See you guys.
There he is, Frank Saravalli, joining us here on Canuck Central, our Monday hockey insider each and every week.
He didn't say anything about Bo. That should raise any eyebrows. Any eyebrows?
Oh, like negotiations started with a five?
Which, I mean, I don't think that's ridiculous, depending on term. In terms of, hey, this is our first type of offer.
Yeah.
It could be like 5'8", 5'9", or something, you know, 8 years, 7 years, or whatever it is.
Making 5'5" right now.
It's not much of a raise. And hey, that's how negotiations go. But one thing it's clear, this one seems more difficult than the JT one, which is clear because they haven't gotten done yet.
Yeah.
And the messaging has been a lot different compared to what we heard after the season ended versus where it's at now. And Bo said all the right things. I'm going to be in Vancouver all year. I want to be a Canuck. And he said all the right things you want to hear when he met with the media last week. Publicly, nobody's saying much, but it's clearly a tougher, more complicated situation than I think people expected. And people shouldn't be surprised necessarily by that, because when you've got JT Miller signed, and now you have Pettersson signed, you have JT signed, you have Pettersson long-term control, you have more room to squeeze the next center that you're negotiating with. And as much as you want to keep Bo, you have to also be mindful because you have other guys signed. And you also have the luxury of knowing you have two centers ahead of him.
Yeah.
That, hey, we can be firm on our price. If you don't have two guys ahead of him, then it's hard for you to be firm on your price. It's hard for you to drive a hard bargain. But now the leverage is on Vancouver's side, as long as Bo wants to be a Canuck. But the question is, at what point does somebody get upset and gets feelings hurt? And at that point, that's when all things are on the table.
The 8 years thing, you know, if you're offering Bo a number that starts with a five, it really only makes some kind of sense if there's an 8 year term on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that would have been the case in that negotiation, but again, you think of it from total money, and 8 years at something, let's say just under $6 million per, that's over $45 million, just under $48
million. What's the player we compared him to a lot? You compared him to a lot.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
His contract has a five in it, but it's 8 years.
He took a pay cut.
Yes.
But it's also like timing of when that contract happened. Nuge was coming off a tough year. Mm-hmm. It was really in the middle of the pandemic. And so there was some contributing factors to the whole situation. Bo, where he's at right now, and some of the other contracts that have been signed for centermen, could easily get $50 million on the open market next summer.
You know, I always thought it was going to be more complicated than people thought,
mm-hmm.
getting Bo signed to a team-friendly number. I'll explain why on the other side, but it was always going to be more difficult than people thought, getting Bo signed to a team-friendly number.
It is Canuck Central. We'll keep diving in on that nugget we got from Frank Saravalli on the Bo Horvat negotiations and more around the Canucks, as we heard from Bruce Boudreau and many others during the course of the day while they were at the Jake Milford Golf Tournament to kind of unofficially open up the season. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio on Sportsnet 650. Canuck Central coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. This hour is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local business since 1892. People are buzzing.
Yeah.
About that quote from Frank Saravalli, that nugget of information on how negotiations have been going between the Canucks and Bo Horvat. It's getting contentious, or has gotten contentious.
More contentious.
Yeah.
He used the word friction.
Yeah. Friction is a word he used. And they opened negotiations with a five on the average annual value. So that's a lot to take in. Hey, everybody's going to start low and work their way up, see where they can bridge the gap. That's how negotiations are. We get all of that. But I'm sure when Bo sees JT is getting an 8, he doesn't, I would imagine he thinks he's pretty close to that, if not all the way up to an 8.
Yeah, I mean, so we always talk about total money, right?
Yes.
And
ultimately, that's what matters most to the player.
So JT got $56
million. Yeah.
I don't see Vancouver wanting to give Bo close to that. What becomes difficult, though, is Bo's market on the free agency is going to be about $50 million in total money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's going to be. That's the price that's been set. You've seen the contracts that have been handed out. You see what players are signing for. And centermen always rise. You know, they always get paid. So my question around Bo always was, he went from being a player that we always assumed would come in on a more mid-range, right? Like, okay, so he'll probably be in the 6 or whatever. But if Bo feels like he can get $7 million plus in the open market, then why would he settle for anything under $50
million? Yeah.
And that's probably what the advice of his agent is. Now, Vancouver was in the 40s too with JT before they moved to the 50s and went to 56 and got a contract done. So we'll see if there's movement here on it. But if Vancouver views him as, okay, like we know JT could be a superstar player and superstar guys or star level players, we might be willing to pay a little bit more for. If they don't think he's that, then what happens ultimately? Because I think it's going to be hard to get Bo signed for under $50 million of total money.
It will come down to term. Like, how do you get more on the total money, but the average annual value is a little bit lower, so it's a little bit easier for the team to carry. You mm-hmm. go more on the term. Will they be willing to go 8 years on the term for Bo Horvat, who's a little bit younger than JT? You'd essentially be signing him up to be a lifetime Canuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the conversation here. That's how, essentially, that's how Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and the Oilers came to an agreement on the average annual value that he's got, because he figured he was worth somewhere in the $40 million range. He still got there, but it ended up costing them more on the term. And you've seen that through the league. That's how teams are handling the flat salary cap, I guess you could say. And it's, I don't know if I see another way for this to work unless the Canucks go to 8 years, which they didn't do with JT, obviously. Would they be willing to do that with Bo, who would be signing basically till he's 35, 36?
One, so Alvin was recently quoted as saying, and I think this was to The Athletic, or Drance, I think, had the quote, where he was quoted as saying, we have to be mindful with how many years, too, here with Bo Horvat as well. We have to be mindful with term. So when we hear that, to me, that means probably not an 8.
Mm-hmm.
For him, they gave JT 7, though. Would they do 7 for Bo? I mean, what is 7 times 6? It's still not enough.
No, it's 42.
Yeah.
So 7 times 7 is 49.
Yeah, and would Vancouver go to 7 for him? I don't know. I don't know. Like, my entire thinking of what Vancouver would do has changed a bit over the course of the summer, of course, with how much they gave JT and all that sort of stuff. But it seems like a lot to be paying Bo 7, paying JT 8. And then Pettersson, however he's going to get.
I mean, there might be a domino effect, because let's say Pettersson has the breakout year that we think he can have, Sat, and does start to look like the player that might warrant a double-digit contract in a couple of years. Well, how significant is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will factor in on what the Canucks feel they have available for Bo Horvat as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as JT handles himself so well at center, look, you can't afford to pay a third line center $7 million.
No, and listen, Vancouver wants to sign Bo, and I think that's true.
Yes.
The question comes down to, when do they want a resolution by? I think everything that they held, everything they felt about JT in a situation, I think to a large extent is also true for Bo Horvat. As much as they talked about, yeah, we can get to the trade deadline, but they don't want to wait to get to the trade deadline and this be unresolved. It's not a good situation to wait that mm-hmm. long for this to be unresolved. So if Vancouver, the longer Vancouver goes with him unsigned and they go into the season with him, it probably leads them down the road of they think they can find a way to make a deal happen. But if you feel like you're not going to be able to bridge that gap, and you know you're not going to let a free agent walk for nothing, and you don't want to wait until free agency, internally, there has to be a date where they want to make a decision. And to me, I'm very curious to know what that date is. Is it training camp?
Mm-hmm.
Which probably not. It's coming up in a week. I don't see this being resolved that quickly. Is it the first game of the season? I don't think so. Is it Christmas, though, maybe?
When Jim Rutherford was talking about JT Miller's negotiation and when they would start to get worried about not having the ink dry on a new contract, he mentioned a month out from the trade deadline. That's when you really start to feel the pressure of here's a big asset that we could lose for free. Are we willing to take that sort of a risk?
And do you want to let it get to that point?
Yeah.
Because I think that if they want to move Bo today, they could do that, obviously. I mean, same with JT. The question was, do you get your price?
Yeah.
Because I do think there are teams out there that like Bo more than they like JT for a variety of reasons. Now, Frank, I agree with him. He's like, I don't believe that myself. I wouldn't think that way, but that doesn't mean other teams don't think that way. And that's all that matters. And
it's comes also down to entirely possible that teams around the league don't view JT as the center the Canucks feel he is right now.
Yeah, and other things too from the past that they may have a certain you know, mind of what they think he is as a player or whatever, and they just, you know, feel like there's some limit or some ceiling or some reservations they may have with the player that limits what the overall return would have been. Bo is a guy that people around the league love.
Yeah.
That people like. Now, there are teams that are cooler on him. They don't think as highly of him, of course. But there are teams that look at him and say, man, like, that's the type of guy we need to win. That's the type of guy we need to add to our team. That's the type of leader that we really need. And the fact that he's a couple of years younger, I think Bo Horvat's a better trade asset than JT Miller was. I really believe that. For Vancouver to act on that, I don't think they will unless they feel like they can't get Bo signed. And I don't think that pressure point is this week or next week. But I think it's before Christmas, Dan. I don't buy the 1 month ahead of the trade deadline. I just, it's too risky waiting for 1 month before the deadline and then you want to make a decision. What if injuries happen? Who else know? You know, what else could go down? You don't know what's going to happen, essentially. I think they want a resolution before the new year would be my guess.
And you have so many questions that come with that. Are they in a playoff spot? Are they comfortable in a playoff spot? Can you trade a player that it will be very important to you when you're in that position? They've said publicly, we can't afford to lose players for nothing. Will that still apply as this year goes on, especially with a player as important to the roster as Bo Horvat? It's a little different when it's Tyler Motte versus Bo Horvat, right? But that is something that's going to be a very, very large storyline for the course of the season.
I had a strong sense on the JT stuff all along that the priority was to sign him. And I thought, if they can, they'll get it done. I didn't think they're going to go to $56 million. I thought maybe $50 million, maybe slightly more. They went about $4 or $5 million more than I thought they would go. But I always had a sense that they really want to keep JT. They really want to keep JT. I'm not saying they don't want to keep Bo. But the sense doesn't seem to be the same type of desire to keep JT doesn't seem to be there from my interactions with people. And all I can tell people is, and I've been very honest with this, is what I can gather talking to people and stuff like that. It doesn't mean everything I say is true. Doesn't mean everything I say is wrong. All it means is I try to provide some insider information from talking to people in the know about where the situation is going. And with Bo, it's a lot harder to nail down, which always makes me wonder a little bit, you know, Dan? Because usually you get a good sense one way or another. It's harder to nail down. So I think there is, it's a harder situation, the Bo one, and I always got the sense that it was a bit harder, even though they said they want to keep him. Because you get a sense through things.
Yep.
And JT, there's always this sense there's a real desire to keep him, despite everything you heard. It's harder to nail down with Bo.
I think what we learned from Frank Saravalli today is how the Canucks feel about Bo to a certain extent, mm-hmm. opening the negotiation with a five. We like you, but we like you to an extent.
We have a lot of reaction on this, as you would imagine,
on
the text inbox and also on Twitter as well. I know Amar, he says, we never thought they would give Miller that money. We'll see what happens with Bo Horvat. I mean, yeah, we'll see. This one, Unsigned, says, JT is 29 and teams are wiser to aging curves. That's it. Although players in their 30s got paid this summer. This was the year where they broke through that barrier in a big way.
Yeah.
But yes, that could play a part of it.
Who scored 99 points this past year? You know? It's quite a big gap.
Yeah, but also...
Like 40 points is the difference between Bo Horvat and JT Miller.
I also think one thing that became pretty clear, and this is where JT as a center versus a winger and all that sort of stuff, if you're viewed as a center, maybe the value would be viewed a bit higher. But generally speaking, forwards value and winger value was pretty depressed this year in this market. I mean, DeBrincat, seventh overall pick is nice, but a seventh and... You know, in a second round pick, as high second round pick, but it wasn't this huge, massive offer people were waiting for. And a lot of the other deals that went down from wingers, it wasn't a ton of money being out there. So unless there's a premium position, teams don't pony up. And I think with Bo, even if you like JT better and all that sort of stuff, I think he's viewed as a bona fide center, and that does matter.
It's a fascinating situation now. You mentioned before we took the break on radio why it was always going to be a more difficult negotiation than maybe we originally thought. What were you alluding to?
Well, because part of it is with centermen, always get paid no matter what, where they go. And the market shifted this summer.
Yeah.
And the market was always going to shift for centermen, because we go back to the Kevin Hayes one. Look at what he had done and what he got paid in free agency. Look at what Bo's done and what he could get paid, and go through all the free agent centermen coming up that are going to be that age.
Tage Thompson.
They all get paid.
Yeah.
They all get paid. And for Bo to not get paid, he would have had to take a massive discount no matter what. So this notion that Bo was going to take this discount, to me, was always jumping
the gun
a little bit. Because what are we talking about here? Yeah. How much is he going to take less? Because if you're thinking Bo is going to sign for this sweetheart deal that's Louis Erickson, essentially, or six times 743, that's never going to happen. He was always going to have a market that was going to be 45 to 50-some million. And for him to take a discount... Beyond that, he would take a huge discount. And the idea that Bo was going to be on a really nice team-friendly number was not going to be what you thought it was. And I made this point about 4 months ago, and I said, I think Bo is taking a discount. Absolutely. I think Bo is taking less to play in Vancouver than anywhere else. But are we talking about, is he taking less than 7 and take 6.5? Or does he think take less than 8 and take 7.5?
Yeah.
Or instead of 7.5, take 7. He might give you $500K off per year, which is 3 to 4 million on the contract, maybe 5 million on the contract. But ask yourself, is that going down from 8 million or going down from 7 million? Because that makes a huge difference in the type of contract we're talking about here. So it was never going to be Bo takes a super team-friendly contract and does this team a huge favor.
So if you look at some free agents that are coming up at the center position right now, Jonathan Toews is a free agent next year, but he's 35 and isn't going to be getting big money. Ryan O'Reilly, who possibly going through negotiations as we speak with the St. Louis Blues. Nathan MacKinnon, we talked about him last week. He is going to stay with the Colorado Avalanche. Dylan Larkin. Pierre-Luc Dubois is an RFA. Dylan Larkin is a UFA. So, you know, when you think about where the market is going to be, Larkin is likely to be the only player better than Bo Horvat at the center position.
Mm-hmm. And chances are he gets re-upped
in Detroit. I would expect all those guys, O'Reilly, Larkin, obviously MacKinnon, all those guys probably re-up with their current teams.
Yeah.
So, and then Bo is going to be the top unrestricted free agent center, and he's going to get $50 million plus.
His agent knows that.
Yeah.
So whatever discount he's taking off that potential projection.
Nazem Kadri. Like,
you know,
he's 32, has kind of had a similar career to Bo, just had a breakout year, put up way more points last year in Colorado than he ever did at any point in his career, and he got 7x7 in Calgary as a 32-year-old. You know, Bo's going to get 50 plus. So it will come down to what you said, Zat. Like, okay, yeah, discount, but like, what's the discount?
And how does Vancouver view him?
Yeah.
Like, this front office has said they like him, but what number is the max for them? For JT, 56 was that number. What is that number for Bo?
Yeah.
Even if it is a bit more than we thought, it may not align. And this is why I asked a few months back when we were talking about this, and I said, hey, if I had a choice, I would, you know, keep JT over Bo, because I think it's going to be hard to keep Bo. So I said, okay, if you want to keep Bo and JT, what's the number you think you could sign Bo to? And most of the responses were like 6 million, 5.5 million. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want Bo to sign, it's going to have to be an 8-year deal, like you mentioned, or the number's probably going to have to be a 7 year AAV.
That's quite the number.
It's the big numbers we're talking about, you know? Like, the notion of Bo signing this super team-friendly number, you're going to look at down the road and say, man, that slots in nicely as a third-line center. When you pay Bo Horvat, you're paying him to be a top six player. You're not paying him to be your third-line center in 2 years or 3 years, because that's the type of money he's going to be earning.
And maybe it's Miller that goes back to the wing in a couple of years. I don't know how it all works, but it's not a simple solution.
This text says, you're out of your mind if you think he's better than Larkin or Riley. No, the point Reach is making, those are the only centers that are going to be free agents next summer. Yeah. And if O'Reilly re-signs in St. Louis and Larkin goes back to Detroit, who's the top center on the market? It's Bo Horvat. That's the point Reach is making. Not a lot of centers on the market, and the couple that are may not even make it there.
And trust me, that's how Bo Horvat's agent is probably thinking as well. So it's a fascinating situation that's going to play out here over the next couple of weeks. Of course, training camp starts on Friday, and we'll get, Thursday, and we'll continue to hear from the captain and how the team plans on navigating this. But it was interesting with the Nils Lundqvist trade, Sat. We talked about it a little bit with Frank, but look, the Canucks are obviously in on right shot defenseman that might be available.
Mm-hmm.
In on Ethan Bear, per IMAX report yesterday. Have been in on Nils Lundqvist. Rick Dhaliwal talked about that this morning. We're going to talk to Don Taylor coming up an hour or two of the show. But the Canucks are in a spot right now where they know they need long-term help on the right side.
Yeah.
Those options are few and far between. Quality options are very expensive if they do become available. And that's the biggest takeaway of this Nils Lundqvist trade. Yeah, he's still essentially a prospect, a guy some people still think has a lot in him, especially as an offensive blue liner, but gets a first-round pick that's top 10 protected, plus a conditional fourth from the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
It is expensive to take a look at a high prospect on the right side.
It really is, and especially guys that have pedigree. And, you know, we talked about Lundqvist a lot over the course of the year with the Rangers and the Canucks and all that sort of stuff.
He was essentially the centerpiece in the Rangers' offers for JT Miller.
And listen, I've since had pushback on some of those pieces from Vancouver's end on certain things, but I do believe Lundqvist was very much a player they were willing to move. The question was how much more on top of that would they want to give? And even those discussions we had, Lundqvist in a first, would that be enough? And most Canucks fans said, no, Lundqvist in a first isn't enough. The way the Rangers viewed that was Lundqvist to us is a high-level prospect. And if we're giving you one more asset, we're giving you a lot. Like, to us, these two assets are really big assets for you, and we're not going to give you a lot more. And people in Vancouver were like, what do you mean? Like, he's worth more than that. But you see, the market for Lundqvist was always going to be a high price. I'm impressed the Rangers got the price, given he wanted a trade, he was going to hold out from camp, and it became contentious, and those things do take away your leverage a little bit. But they got a great price for him, and it also shows, to your point, Dan, it's not cheap.
Yeah.
Romanov went for a 15th overall pick, right? And he's good, but you see what he went for. And even Ethan Bear is not going to be free.
No.
Round pick, I don't think. It's not going to be one of your best prospects because he's making $2.2 million. But you're not going to get Ethan Bear for Jason Dickinson.
No.
Like, that's not happening.
Or Tanner Pearson.
Because the main reason for that, think of Carolina's motivation. Why would they take on anywhere from $6 to $7 million in total cash just to get rid of $2.2 million?
Yeah.
And this is a team that's very careful with how they spend their money. So, like, if you're making a trade for Ethan Bear, what do you give up to get him?
Yeah.
And my theory here, Dan, is that Vancouver was always more interested in Nils Lundqvist.
Okay.
Even the last little while than Ethan Bear. Not to say they weren't just interested in Ethan Bear. Maybe they do make something happen here now. IMAC had the report yesterday about Vancouver being interested in him. But I think Lundqvist would have been the guy they really wanted to make happen. But you can't do it without giving up a first-round pick. And having the choice of a first-round pick in Nils Lundqvist and Nils Höglander, who do you take?
Ooh. A first-round pick or Nils Höglander?
Yeah.
You take the first-round pick.
So even if Vancouver was willing, and I'm not saying they were, I'm not reporting this, just saying, even if Vancouver was willing to trade Nils Höglander straight up for Nils Lundqvist, this offer was better.
Yeah. Top 10 protected. That's That's about, and you know, the salary cap space, always valuable. You get a contract off the books and have a chance to use it in another way. I want to talk more about Ethan Bear, the player, and how it would fit. Does it make sense to take a chance on that player? We heard a little bit from Frank Saravalli on what has plagued Ethan Bear in his young career, and if there's reason to want to take a chance on the player. We'll get into that. Don Taylor is going to join us as well. Plus, Bruce Boudreau on Ilya Mikheyev. And were we too quick to jump on Quinn Hughes playing the right side full time? That's coming up in hour two of the program. Subscribe on the podcast. That way you never miss an edition of Canuck Central. You're listening live from the Kintec studio on Sportsnet 650.